Hi, I'm Kat.
And I'm Emma.
If you love the Dead Parent Club podcast, you can help support its future using the Acast supporter feature.
Now, it's up to you how much you give, and there is no regular commitment. So if you can and you want to, please do hit the link in the show description to support now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, welcome to the Dead Parent Club podcast, a community of like-minded young adults who are all grieving a similar loss. I'm Catherine Hooker, and I speak with inspirational people from all over the world whose lives have been impacted from losing a parent at a young age. In this podcast, our guests will tell their own grief story, discussing how their losses have impacted their lives and the path they have found themselves on. We laugh, we cry, but together we've come to realise that we are far from alone in our own grief journeys.
And I know you've had a lot of people sort of on the podcast who sort of had a similar timeline in age sort of sense, that when you lose a parent at that kind of brink of adulthood, especially, you know, you've just moved somewhere and you're establishing a new identity for yourself in a lot of ways at university. It's kind of a clean slate. It's very hard to then sort of feel like you're then defined by something that's happened to you. And I think I've seen that, you see stuff all the time, like motivational quote unquote things, like, don't let your experiences define you, or don't be defined by bad things that have happened to you. But it does define you in a lot of ways.
Hey guys, and welcome to this week's episode of the Dead Parent Club podcast. This week I interviewed Finty Hunter, whose dad, Doug, died during a really just pivotal time in her life when you're just really figuring out who you are. In this episode, she talks about how she found comfort in writing about her grief in the form of articles and plays, including a play that she wrote and played at Edinburgh Fringe, which is pretty cool. We also talk about how we feel defined by the bad experiences that happened to us, and how she missed being able to tell her dad one of the biggest parts of her life and her identity that he never got to see, understand, or know. So I really hope this episode is useful to just as many of you that are listening, and I hope that the upcoming festive season isn't laying too heavy on you. I look forward to catching up next week, and just a heads up, we'll be recording a Facebook Live on Saturday with a special guest that you can find out more about on my Instagram and Facebook channels. So keep an eye out. Talk to you all soon. Have a good week. Okay. So first of all, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. I'm really looking forward to this because I think we've got some like really interesting talking points.
Yeah.
Especially with, like, you know, writing about your grief and being quite public with it in that aspect, and also being part of the LGBT plus community as well, which I think, you know, a lot of people are going to resonate with your situation as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be really just important to cover. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too.
But yeah, if you wouldn't mind, introduce yourself to the listeners. Let them know who you are, where you're from.
So I'm Finty Hunter. I'm 22. I always forget.
I'm always the same.
Like, how old am I now? So I'm 22. I live down in Surrey near London, and I've kind of grown up around here. And my dad died when I was 18, not long after I started university, and it was a very sort of important, like, time in my life for who I became. Which I think is part of the reason why I want to come on this and kind of talk about what that was like and how I've kind of processed it and dealt with it, and the ways I've done that might be a bit different to other people in some ways.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose kind of tell us about your dad, you know, your individual loss, and tell us what he was like as well, and what his name was.
So my dad was named Doug. And he was Doug. he was a bit of a grumpy Scottish man. so he he actually was a stay-at-home dad as well for most of my life. So from when I was about 7, he quit his job and stayed home. My mum worked full-time. So at home, it was just me, my dad, and my older brother. And he would like drive us to school every day. He'd cook all our meals and everything. So he was very much like the homemaker of the family. So I had a bit of a different kind of family dynamic to a lot of people. Like, I grew up in a matriarchy. Completely.
I love that.
I know, it's great. Yeah, it was great. So I had a really close relationship with my dad in a lot of ways. And I'm the youngest of two in like my family. I do have some half siblings, which are my dad's elder children. But it was just really me and my brother. My dad was great. He was a brilliant cook. Always so willing to do anything for my brother. Like, any time I'd be like, can you come pick me up at this ridiculous time from somewhere 45 minutes away? He'd be like, yeah, all right, I'll see you there.
Bless him. So he basically lived for you and your brother then, pretty much.
Yeah. So I was so lucky to have him. I think he definitely found it hard when I went to university, because a bit of an empty nest syndrome, probably.
Yeah, the second one fledged the nest. Yeah. Yeah. What did he do with his time initially?
There wasn't really a very long period that it happened. So I left for uni in 2016. I started in the October. So my mum and dad drove me up to Cambridge, you know, dropped me off, helped me take all the stuff up to my room, and then they left. And then there's that overwhelming moment when you start uni where you're like, oh my God, I don't know anyone. What am I going to do here? Yeah. And I was so lucky with the people I met at uni, but I'll talk about that more later. So that was the October. And then I think I came home or saw my parents a few times during my first term. So my dad came up to Cambridge a couple of times because he was going to York, where we had a place where my mum now lives. And it was kind of halfway between the two, so he'd stop off and we'd have lunch, or I'd left something at home so he'd bring it up to me or whatever, because he was always so generous with stuff like that. I think I went home once during that term. I'd gone to London for something, I think for a concert with some friends, and then gone back home to stay there for the weekend and see my mum and dad.
So your dad passed away very quickly after a cancer diagnosis, didn't he?
Yeah.
And obviously, I know a bit of a background about this before you come onto the podcast. And, you know, I read that he was at home for like as long as possible before going to the hospice and stuff. And that kind of time is really difficult when they're at home and you're kind of overwhelmed by this whole, like, nobody prepares you for that, do you?
No.
It's shocking. The whole thing is really kind of scary. But you obviously then, you went back to university quite quickly, didn't you, after your dad died?
I went back a week after he died.
Yeah, which, you know, I will not say that that's not the right thing to do, because I actually went and did training for my part-time job. I worked for Pandora part-time. I left for 2 weeks, about 3 days after my mum died. I came back for 2 days for the funeral and then back again. But I don't know whether you, like, how was that for you going back to university? Like, did people say anything to you about it, saying that you went back too quickly, or?
So I think it was a weird one for people, because a lot of people didn't know he'd even been ill, because the timeline of it was that I never missed a day of university. So my term, my first term ended, and me and my friends went out to this amazing like winter ball, which we were so excited for, being like so excited for ages. And it was that night my dad went into hospital. Wow. So I found out the next morning, came home, and then went back to uni after he died. And no one really knew apart from my closest friends.
Oh, that's crazy, isn't it?
So when I went back, all these people that I was acquaintances with, girls in my like halls who I knew, but not well enough to have ever told them this. They were like, oh, how was your Christmas? Like, did you have a nice time? Et cetera, et cetera.
What did you say?
The first time it happened, I was just like, oh yeah, it was all right, thanks, how about you?
Oh god.
Because I didn't want to just be like, oh, by the way, my dad just died. Like, I just didn't know what to say. I just totally panicked. She's like, yeah, it's fine. And then after that, I posted a Facebook post.
It's the easiest way to just let people know, isn't it?
I was like, this is so much easier than having to say it to people, it just means people will know and they'll just sort of quietly be like, okay. So I posted like a family picture, which I think was the one I sent on the like pre-podcast form.
Yeah, very cute. Yeah.
Yeah, which is the last picture I have of like of me and my dad and of the whole family. It was when we went on holiday that summer. And I posted that with like a caption saying that he had died. And then I got quite a lot of messages and stuff from people just being like, I didn't know. Like, oh my God. I think most people like didn't really comment on how quickly I went back. I know people definitely thought it was too soon. My like pastoral tutor at uni was like, maybe you should go. Like, maybe you should take the year out. And, you know, I had friends of mine who were obviously concerned. And bear in mind, I'd only known these friends for like 8 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to ask, like, how did you cope with being around people that you didn't really necessarily know that well?
I was so lucky with some of them who are still some of my absolute best friends to this day. And the amount of like love and support they gave me when they didn't really have to, you know, we'd only known each other for 8 weeks. It was very early on in a scale of friendship. And they were just thrown into this very intense situation. And I had, you know, really good friends from home as well, from school, who knew my dad. And that was always really nice to see them as well, because they knew my dad.
Yeah.
And I think that was the difference. My uni friends have never really met my dad.
I suppose it's like your uni friends can give you that kind of like emotional support from a point of view of like being there for you, like whenever you're feeling down, whereas people that know your parent give you that kind of, it's a completely different aspect of support, isn't it? The stuff that you need to like know that they actually did live, they actually were a real person that lived. Otherwise I think it can be so easy to get wrapped up in this new life where they're not there anymore, but when you're around people that didn't know them,
it was a life that was never connected to him, my university life. So it was just, it's like my life kind of just split in two, and I had this life at university where I could kind of pretend that none of this had happened, and nothing had really directly changed in my day-to-day life at university. I still had lectures to go to and essays to write and everything, but then at home there was just this huge sense of absence and loss, which is why I didn't want to stay at home. And my parents really didn't want me to take the year out. They were very against it. They wanted me to go back. And my dad said to me before he died, like, you can't let this ruin your university experience.
How do you feel about going back home now, even though home's not the same place as it was? Like, do you still feel that like enormous loss there?
I think it is different because it's not the same place. It is somewhere I spent a lot of time with my family. It's just a small flat in York, and my mum lives there now. And we've had it since I was about 6 or 7. So we spent a lot of like summers there as a family and stuff, just like any time we could. So there's always that sense that he's not there. And especially when we go on family trips and things like that. And it's always weird things like booking a restaurant. So how many is the table for? And now it's always 3. And I think that's a very like small example of this like overarching sense of something missing.
Yeah, I completely resonate with that. We me and my like big like wider family have like a big family WhatsApp group chat. And somebody put on it like, oh, can everybody post their birthdays, because there's honestly about 30 of us and we all just like miss each other's birthdays all the time. So I replied, and it felt so strange. Even now, it's been 5 years for me, and like it felt so strange writing down just me, my dad, and my brothers.
Yeah.
And not my mum. Like, it's just me and these like 3 men, and not like the most important woman in my life. It's so. Yeah. It's moments like that that are just so odd, aren't they?
Yeah. When you meet someone for the first time and they ask you the standard list of questions, like, especially when you're at university, it probably gets a bit different once you graduate. But the people always ask, oh, you know, what do your parents do? I'm like, oh, well, my mum does this. And they're like, oh, what about your dad? Oh. Or I just don't mention it at all. And then people think that I, like, don't have one.
Or you've got, like, a bad relationship with him or something. It's really difficult. I hate I hate, but I also love those situations. I hate them because I feel uncomfortable, but I also love them because it makes them feel uncomfortable, and they should know that not every single person has got both parents.
Exactly.
to be more cautious when they ask that question.
And sometimes I answer on it, and I do go for the completely honest answer. And I did this. I was on holiday with my family over Christmas, and we were on this cruise, and one of the expedition team was like, oh, where is your dad? Because they'd noticed that me, my mum, and my brother are such a tight-knit family.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, he's dead. And you could see their faces just go, okay, right, cool.
Yeah.
What answer did they want from that? Mm.
It's insane how it shocks people so much, though, when death is actually such a huge part of our lives, in general. Do you know what I mean? But we're so scared of it. And we feel so awkward about talking about it. It's strange. Like, whenever somebody tells me that their parents dead, I'm like, yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people now with their parents. Yeah. Like, it's actually completely normal. But people are still just like cringe so much when they hear it.
Yeah, you can see, because they don't know what to say, and they don't want to say the wrong thing, which I understand. But then it just gets a situation where you just stare at each other awkwardly and no one knows what to say.
So obviously a big part of your kind of grief journey then over the past couple of years has been how kind of vocal you've been about your loss, whether it's writing about it, or obviously your time in the play as well. So basically I want to hand it over to you. Like, I'd love to know kind of what you wrote your dissertation about, and how your time at Edinburgh Fringe and how that came about. I think it's so interesting.
So I've always loved writing, which is such a cliche thing to say, but when I was a little kid, I would write stories about my teddy bears, and I think they were spies or something. I've always thought it was quite cute, and so I've always written. And when my dad was ill, I did write a bit when he was ill, like some poetry, because I was quite into writing poetry at that point. And there was one particular poem which I started while he was dying, and I finished after he died.
Oh.
And it's a poem called I Won't See You Graduate, which is what he said to me in the hospital cafe when we went in for an appointment. And that's when they told us that it was a matter of weeks, not months. And I think my mum and brother had gone to get the car and bring it around to the front of the hospital, so my dad didn't have to walk too far because he was very weak at that point. And we were just sat there waiting, and he just said to me, I won't see you graduate. And that always stuck with me, which meant my graduation day itself was a very bittersweet day, which 100%. It always going to. And I think every big life event will always be like that when you've lost someone. So I wrote these poems and sort of shared them. They were published in this sort of university magazine thing, which was really cool. And I had people come up to me and ask me about it, or not necessarily ask me about it, but say they'd read this piece and thought it was really moving and stuff like that. And I think I wrote an article for the student newspaper in Cambridge. I think I wrote one, maybe two, about my loss. It was also sort of my first proper publicly sharing of it in a big way. Again,
find writing that? Do you find it easy? It just kind of rolls out, or do you have to really kind of sit? Do you feel all the feels when you're doing it?
I think it really depends. Sometimes it becomes such a this is what happened, blah, 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 like a spiel you do.
Yeah, like a script.
Yeah. But then when you get into the actual nitty gritty of the more conceptual stuff, actually what it meant to me at that time in my life to lose my dad, it can get harder. And to be able to express those things as well can be really difficult, because they're such abstract feelings and they're all so tied up in so many other things that to be able to lay out on paper is both really helpful but can be really difficult.
Yeah, I agree. I turn to writing a lot when I'm really, really struggling with my emotions, when I'm in a really kind of bad place. That's where I turn to, when you just kind of want to get it out, but you end up kind of writing it I don't know why, it kind of comes out as a poetry style, doesn't it? It's just the way that it kind of flows out.
Yeah, 100%.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so when it came to choosing what to do my dissertation on, it was the end of my second year, And my like director of studies, who was the guy in charge of like my degree, he said to me, he was like, okay, what do you want to do your dissertation on? We need to find you someone to supervise you for it. And I was like, oh, I didn't know. I hadn't even thought about it. I was like, oh, I'll write it on death. And he was like, is that like, do you have anything more specific? And I was like, nah. I was like, just find me someone. I'm just going to write on death.
Nice.
And he actually, you know, he found me a supervisor who turned out to be really good once I'd sort of figured out what on earth I was actually going to write on. And I found this one particular amazing text called Nox by Anne Carson, who's a classicist. And I'd heard of her from like criticism I'd read and stuff. But I'd never read anything she'd done. And it's this, I mean, book is kind of a, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a book. It's it comes in a box and it's actually one long sheet of paper that you like unfold.
Okay.
And it's this collage as well. So there's like photographs and like excerpts of text messages and stuff, all about her brother who died.
Oh, wow. Okay. I've never heard of it.
I think it's, I don't know how I found out about it. I think I just Googled books about grief. It was on a list somewhere. And I ended up writing my dissertation on it and a couple of other texts about sort of how people use other media and other texts and things that have already existed to try and process this new experience for them, this grief. Mm.
That's so interesting.
It was super interesting to do.
Yeah, I think that's so cool. And I think it's amazing how, even though your dad had died, obviously quite recently when you were at uni, you actually managed to find an outlet for it, which I think is amazing and such a good outlet as well, with like letting other people aware of like how grief can affect you.
Yeah, and I spent a lot of my kind of time at university talking about my grief and dealing with it, but also at the same time really struggling with how I was letting or not trying not to let my grief identify me. And I wrote about this in my play, which I'll talk about in a bit probably, but about how I didn't want to just be the girl whose dad died.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was, in a lot of ways, who I was, because most people at uni had met me right after that had happened.
Yeah, I completely get that. But I do, I'm just, bear with me now, because I was listening to a podcast the other day and they said something that I was like, oh my God, that literally describes that feeling so much. Because so many people that I speak to honestly feel the exact same way. And I just think, in a way, it is something that we kind of, I think initially, straight after the loss, we're probably perceived as that. But I think as time goes on, people forget because it's not their lives. But basically, this quote is, I am what I think you think I am.
Yeah.
So, like, we think, so say if somebody, we thought that somebody thought that we were dumb, we would also think that we're dumb because we think that they think that we're dumb. Do you know what I mean?
It's all about your own perception.
Yeah.
And then you project it onto how you think other people think of you.
And I thought that was so true because I was exactly the same as you. Like, I remember breaking down in tears in like clubs at uni, being like, I don't want to be that girl whose mum died. I just think so many of us feel that way. It would be interesting if we did like a little questionnaire for like everybody that we knew at uni. Yeah. Like, did you see me as the girl whose dad died?
I'm sure some of them would come back as yes, but I'm sure the vast majority would be no. And I think it is, especially like people, and I know you've had a lot of people sort of on the podcast who sort of had a similar timeline and age sort of sense, that when you lose a parent at that kind of brink of adulthood, and especially, you know, you've just moved somewhere and you're establishing a new identity for yourself in a lot of ways at university. It's kind of a clean slate.
Yeah.
It's very hard to then sort of feel like you're then, I sort of defined by something that's happened to you. And I think I've seen, you see stuff all the time, like motivational, quote unquote, things. Like, don't let your experiences define you. Or
but it
don't be defined by bad things that have happened to you. But it does define you in a lot of ways.
I think especially if you take routes like, you know, both you and I have, where you've used your experience to write about it and to write plays about it. And I've taken my experience to create a podcast about it where I am very much known as the girl with the dead mum because I've got the podcast. So I've basically written my own identity there. But I do think it is what you make of it, isn't it? And it's cool if you can own that identity and turn it into something that's educational for other people as well, or helpful for other people. But yeah, tell us about Edinburgh Fringe then, because I think that is very cool. How did you get there? What did you do?
I went to the Fringe with my mum in 2018.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
And I'd never been before. My dad's hometown is actually Edinburgh.
Nice.
So we went and we stayed with a friend of my mum's. We saw a few things. We were only there for a few days. And I was like, this is so incredible. Like the whole atmosphere of it. And I'd never done theatre before, anything like that. But on the train home, I was like, I want to do this. I want to write a play and I want to put it on at the Fringe. So I started writing this play, which was loosely based on my experience of going to a grief group.
Nice.
Which is actually how I found out about the podcast, because Nick, who you had on the podcast,
was— Do you know him?
Yeah, he was in my grief group.
Oh no.
At Cambridge.
Oh, I see. Oh god, he is a dream.
Yeah, Nick's lovely.
What a lovely guy.
So that's how I found out about the podcast, because I follow him on Instagram and I think he posted about it.
Oh, I love that. Connections.
I know. Everyone with a dead parent knows each other.
Yeah, literally, it's so true. I could probably do like a spider diagram of everybody.
Isn't it? So I went to that group in my second year, which was a really, really great experience. And then I started writing this play, which was about a group therapy situation. And obviously no one in the play was based on the people I met, because it's not my place to tell anyone else's story, obviously. Mm. But I started writing the play and it evolved a lot over sort of a few months. And in the, I think, November of that year, a girl I knew at university posted on Facebook saying they were doing this new writing night at the student theatre. And she was running it and it was just like short excerpts of stuff, but she needed some new stuff. So I sent her a message and I was like, hey, I've written this thing. I've never written anything for theatre before. I don't know how to write for theatre, but I've written this thing. And if you actually do just need stuff to put on, I'm happy to... I'll send it over and you can tell me what you think. And I was like, no hard feelings if you don't like it. I was like, it's fine. And so we put on a 10-minute version of it. I think I kind of, because the play wasn't even finished at this point. And it was nowhere, like, it didn't look the same then as it did when I put it on like properly. But doing that and sort of having, we had like some actors in it and had a director, they were all like freshers at the university who just wanted to get involved in theatre, and putting it on was just really exciting.
Yeah, I bet.
And then I saw there was like an opportunity at one of the like theatres at the uni, because a lot of the colleges have their own like little theatres, they were doing a new writing season or something like that. So I messaged them and I was like, oh, hey, I've got this play, I can send it over to you, I can pitch it, like, can I put it on next term? I didn't hear anything for ages. And then they got back to me on, I think it was like Christmas Eve or something.
Oh, wow.
And the slot they'd given me was like 3 weeks into term. So I had about a month to finish the play, cast it, find like a director and like crew, cast it, and like get it sorted so that it was actually ready to be put on.
God, you really dove right in there.
No, I wasn't expecting to get a slot like that early in term. I was hoping it'd be like at the end. So yeah, I was suddenly like, oh my God, I have to actually first of all finish the play and find some kind of resolution to it.
Yeah.
Because it didn't really have any shape to it at that point. It was just sort of conversations between people. And so I went back and got some people on board and we held auditions and cast, an incredible cast actually. They were all such great people. And started rehearsing. And from there, the play changed a lot. Like who the characters were, I kind of worked it out a bit more.
Nice, yeah.
And it became this like, it's an hour long. And it's I think there's five or six characters. I should really know how many people are in it, but I actually can't remember. I think there's five. And they sort of sit in a room and they have the counsellor. And it goes sort of, it's over a period of like 6 or 7 weeks. And it's just sort of small excerpts of their conversations when they're talking about issues of grief and sort of how they're dealing with it. And they're all students. They're all in their like late teens, early 20s. Mm-hmm. And they're all dealing with it totally differently.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, and it's about how they're trying to deal with it and how like they find comfort in each other, or they really conflict with each other because they disagree with how someone else is going about it, which can definitely happen. Because when you have your own sort of idea of how you're grieving and you see someone else doing it differently, you're like, am I doing it wrong?
Yeah.
And yeah, it can get quite, at least in this, not it, I didn't find that at all in my actual grief group. There was no conflict. But it was really like healing and exciting to put it on, and we put it on in Cambridge. And loads of my friends came to see it. And my mum and brother came to see it, which was amazing.
Oh, wow.
And a few like other people. And then my then girlfriend, her mum and grandma came to see it.
Oh, that's so nice.
Very sweet.
Yeah.
And we had really good audiences. Like, I think we sold out pretty much in Cambridge.
God, that's incredible. I mean, how amazing to turn like what was like not even a 10-minute play to like an hour's play and about something so important as well. Mm. I think that's incredible.
Yeah, I had people say to me like thank you for writing that, and especially when we got to the Fringe. And the Fringe is hard, and we had like a very hard slot to sell. We were on at like 11:30 at night.
Wow, yeah, okay.
Which, and no one really wants to come see a play about death at 11:30. They want to go see comedy.
How did it go?
It was stressful and very good fun.
Mm.
And we did sell tickets. Not a lot, but we did sell tickets.
I mean, some is better than none, right?
Exactly. And I think the most sort of the biggest takeaway for me was one night, which I think we didn't have that many people in, but the performance had just finished and we were like packing up the stage because there's a quick turnaround. I mean, the stage was just like five chairs, but we were just clearing it all off. And one of the audience members came up to me and she'd seen I was the writer, I think. And so this audience member came up to me and she said to me, she's like, thank you so much. And she told me that one of her parents had died when she was about 19 and she'd never really seen something that represented it so like much like her experience.
Oh, wow. It makes everything feel worth it, doesn't it?
Yeah. So that was like incredibly important to me to actually have someone say to me, like, it meant something to them.
Snaps to you. I mean, and I bet it impacted a lot more than just that one person who told you as well. Like, for every one person who says something, there's probably 10 people who haven't. So that's amazing. Obviously, you mentioned when you filled in the form to come onto the podcast that you really wanted to speak about being LGBT and, you know, not being able to tell your parents. Yeah. So talk about that and kind of how you've navigated that, because I can imagine it's such a huge part of your life, and not have been able to tell him must have been really difficult.
So it is like a difficult thing, I think, because so I'm bisexual, and I was not out when my dad died, at least not at home. Some of my school friends knew, and a lot of my uni friends knew by that point as well. So I was pretty open about it, but I'd never told my family.
Yeah.
And a big part of that was because my dad was quite homophobic.
Wow. Okay.
Which, you know, it's not an excuse, but I think a lot of it was his generation.
Yeah. No, I get that. I get that.
And so for me, looking back at like 18-year-old me is very strange, because it's like he knew someone who is so different to who I am.
Yeah.
And people talk about this a lot when they talk about like losing a parent at a young age. It's like they never got to see you as an adult.
Yeah, that's how I feel as well.
And like, I definitely feel that. And I think it's another layer of it when it's something that's a big part of your life.
Mm.
A big part of your identity that they never got to see or understand or know.
Have you like spoken to, obviously your mum knows, but like, mm-hmm. have you spoken to her about this?
I honestly, I don't know. I think it's been mentioned, definitely. And the kind of conclusion we've always come to is he would have got over it. He was a bit homophobic, but he loved me and my brother.
Loved you more.
More than any thing, like any sort of prejudice he could have had.
Mm.
But it is an interesting one, and it was something I'd never really heard anyone speak about. And I remember in my like group, I wanted to talk about it, but I didn't really know how to like start that conversation. And one of the other girls in the group, who was this amazing young woman from America who was there on an exchange in the UK, and she had a very similar like experience to me in the fact she just started university when her dad died.
Oh, yeah.
And she had the same thing where she'd later come out as LGBT, and she was talking about that, and she wrote an article about it maybe 6 months, a year ago, about that whole sort of different sense of loss that comes with that, and this mm-hmm. other facet of your identity that this parent never knew.
I fully just kind of think it must be, obviously it's not anything that I myself have experienced, but I think it must be really hard because it is such a huge part of your identity. And kind of knowing that they're not going to see that part of you must be really hard.
Yeah, and it definitely was, like, especially like when he was ill, because I had that debate with myself about, do I tell him?
Mm.
But then I decided it would feel so much worse if I told him and he had a bad reaction, and I never got the chance for that to be resolved.
Yeah, I get that.
So I chose not to.
It must have been such a heavy thing to carry with you. Like, I bet it was on the tip of your tongue so often.
Yeah, I mean, that whole period when he was ill is sort of a blur in a lot of ways. Mm. It was just such an intense period. It was only 4 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that's no time at all, is it? Like,
no, not
whatsoever.
And that's something I think about a lot is like, because I feel, when people have their experience of like grief, like it's quite often sort of either this like really long drawn out thing, which has all its own horrible aspects, or it's just out of the blue heart attack or something like that, which equally has its own absolutely horrible sort of unique experiences attached to it. And no one is worse or better than the other. And then I kind of just sort of fell in the middle.
Yeah. Did you ever have that thing when people say to you, like, oh, at least you knew?
I think I had both, like, at least you knew, and at least, you know, he didn't suffer for too long. I think I had both reactions.
God, they're the worst, aren't they?
And it's like, it doesn't make it any better, like, that I knew.
No, because it's still such a shock on the day that it happens.
Yeah.
I'm so passionate about this, but like, you cannot prepare yourself for somebody's death. We
completely knew it was going to happen. And especially my mum, because my mum's sister had died 9 months earlier.
Wow. Yeah. I remember reading that.
I think the same. The issue with my dad's cancer is they don't actually know what kind of cancer it was.
Wow.
Because it was just so spread, they were like, we can't actually, we can't work it out. And my mum's sister died of something similar in the March of that year.
God bless your mum.
She'd watched her sister like sort of deteriorate. And I don't think she was there when it actually happened, from what I remember. But like she knew that my dad was very close to death.
God, that's so much grief to handle, isn't it?
Yeah, but it was like, especially for my mum, like a lot. And I think the thing was she never thought my dad would be the first one to die out of the two of them. So my mum actually has had cancer 3 times as well.
God, that's like me and my family. My dad's bloody riddled with it.
Yeah. So it was always kind of the expectation that my dad would outlive my mum. So she was never expecting to be left a widow, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, nobody can prepare you for that either. No. Like, I can't imagine that loss that she must feel in her life as well. And the responsibility suddenly for, I mean, obviously she's your mum and she has so much responsibility anyway, but I'm obviously assuming that you went to your dad for a lot of stuff because you just spent that much time with him. So it's kind of, you know, your parent does have to pick up the other half, don't they? And it's a lot of pressure.
I think the most noticeable thing is like weird practical things that none of us know how to do. I think there was something wrong with my smoke alarms in my flat, and I couldn't get I had to change the batteries. I couldn't get the cover of them to come off. It just wouldn't do it. I was just like crying because it was just beeping at me like every 10 seconds, like a day.
That's so annoying.
And I called my mum and she was like, I don't know what to do. Like, I can't fix this. Because it was stuff like that was always my dad's job. And like, you suddenly have to learn how to do those things.
Yeah. 100%.
And when my mum moved up to the flat she now lives in, it was an absolute tip. It was like this half finished mess because my dad had been like renovating it.
Oh.
So she's just is left with this sort of half finished mess of a flat that she has to somehow sort out. And the only upside was my dad was categorically refusing for her to let someone like pay someone to come and do the stairs.
And now she
finally got to do it because she'd done them before, like put flooring on them, and it was terrible and it all fell apart. She finally got to actually just pay a man to do it. Yeah, exactly.
Aww.
But it does just completely change dynamics within families, I think.
Yeah, everybody I speak to always says that. It does just make such a difference. And overnight as well. Overnight you're just suddenly like, wow, this isn't the same as it was yesterday.
Yeah. And I think, like, for me, and I'm sure for lots of other people, but I always feel like I left home for university and never came back.
Yep, I feel the same. Yeah. Home was never home again.
No.
After my mum died. Because my mum died when I was in my, what was meant to be my 3rd year at uni.
Yeah.
So, you know, similar, like, you leave with a parent, you come home and you're like, shit.
Yeah.
And you're, one, a completely different person, but two, your home life is completely different. Like, everywhere you look is just not the same as it was before.
No, especially when like, they were ill at home as well.
Yeah, exactly. You don't look at places in the same way anymore, do you?
No, completely.
Mm. So one of my kind of final questions is, do you think that your loss has changed who you are as a person?
Definitely, I think, yeah. I'm not entirely sure how, because so much of how I've changed because of the loss is so tied up with how I've changed and just becoming an adult. But it's definitely made me, I think, a lot more appreciative of my family, which, not that I wasn't appreciative of them before, but the time I get to spend with them, especially because I don't live with them, and during lockdown as well, like I didn't see them. I've only seen my mum like 3 or 4 times this year because I couldn't go up to see her. But yeah, it's made me a lot more appreciative. It's made me a lot sometimes it's hard to find the words for it. It's just I don't want to say it's made me stronger because it sounds like such a cliche and I don't think it's necessarily true. But I think it's made me kind of more ready to deal with things because nothing can really be worse than how I felt during that period.
I think it makes you aware of how resilient you are.
Yeah.
That you didn't know before. Because that's what everybody always says, like, oh, I can't imagine ever coping with that. But and it's like, you'll be surprised with how resilient you are and how you have to be.
You have no choice but to cope.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with people saying, I can't believe you went back to university. How did you do that? I didn't think I had any other choice.
Mm.
Well, I mean, my other choice was to sit at home and do nothing for a year. And I thought that would be 100 times worse.
Yeah.
Than to just sort of go and try and live my life as best I could.
Mm. I mean, there is no right thing to do, is there?
No, there isn't. That's what I always say to people.
You do what's laid on the table in front of you, and you just kind of pick an option, pick a card.
And then you can look back and think, oh, did I do the right thing?
Mm. But it's got you to where you are today. And I think
exactly
where you are today is brilliant.
You did what you did, and you did it for a reason. Mm. You made whatever choice you made at that time for a reason.
Mm.
And a lot, you know, even if you think you did something wrong, you probably weren't in the right headspace to be making all the best choices.
Exactly. You have to give yourself a bit of a break.
Yeah.
Okay, well, my final question, if that's okay with you, mm-hmm. is what would you say to other people who experience a similar loss to you and about their grief and probably a similar kind of journey to you as well, you know, not being able to tell your dad about being bisexual? And I'm sure there will be people listening who have been in a similar spot and haven't really spoken about it.
Yeah, I mean, a big thing is like what we were talking about earlier is not being afraid to have your grief as part of your identity.
Mm.
Because it's always going to be there in one way or another. You can't change that. Like your parent is always going to be dead, and it sucks. But it's okay to admit that and to like not, you don't have to feel ashamed of it.
Mm.
And I think you've also got to give yourself a break. You know, I might look back and think, oh, maybe I should have, when I had the chance, told my dad that I was queer or bi or whatever. Maybe I should have done that. Maybe I would feel better now if I'd done that. But also, like, I don't know that for a fact. I have to give myself a break. And I remember seeing this, it was like some quote in some trashy TV show, it was nothing to do with grief, but it was about some kind of, I think, trauma or something. And one character says to the other, like, can you look back at the person you were then and like feel sympathy for who they were and what they were going through?
Oh, yeah.
Rather than just placing judgment on them.
Mm.
And that has always resonated with me, like with my grief and with anything else in my life. It's like, especially looking at things when you were younger, when you're a teenager and you were going through something and you might have made the wrong choice in how you dealt with it. You've got to be able to look back on who you were then and think, and give them a break, you know, give yourself a break, trust yourself and know that it will all work out, and positive things can come from the most like horrendous of situations.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's such an important takeaway. And sometimes the hardest thing to realise when you're like in the deepest, darkest bits of your grief as well.
Because if my dad hadn't have died, I would have never had the opportunity to take a place at the Fringe.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool.
And do it in his hometown as well, which is a whole other sort of part of it that was so meaningful.
Yeah.
Walking past his school every day on our way to the venue and stuff like that.
I love that. And I hate saying this because it's so cheesy, but he'd be so proud of you for that.
Yeah, and he'd always been the biggest supporter of my writing. Always been. So it felt like a nice and very strange thing to do, but in like a good way.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. I mean, same thing with this podcast. People always say to me, like, your mum would be so proud. And I'm like, yeah, but it's kind of weird because it's here because she's dead.
Yeah, so. Those kind of things. People say the same to me about lots of things like that. And it's like, I mean, I'm sure he would, but like, it also wouldn't have happened if he wasn't dead. And it's very hard to marry those two things.
It's hard to picture your life because these things are such big parts of your life. It's hard to then picture what it would have been like if they hadn't have died and what your version of success would have been.
Yeah, it's very hard to imagine who I would be now if he hadn't have died.
I'm the same.
Yeah, because it happened at such a pivotal time in my life and everything just changed.
Mm.
So suddenly that who knows?
Who knows, exactly. Take what we're given.
Life happens and it can really suck. But it is what it is.
It's what it is. I mean, so true, exactly. Well, Vinti, thank you so much for coming on. This has been great.
Thank you for having me on. I feel like I've been a bit rambly, but you know.
Oh my God, no, not at all. Not at all. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Dead Parent Club podcast. I so hope that you've enjoyed it and you found some comfort in the stories that you've heard here today. As always, I would just like to remind you that neither myself nor any of the guests that come onto the show are healthcare professionals. Therefore, if you do find yourself struggling with your grief, I highly recommend that you seek out professional help, whether that be from your GP or from the numerous charities out there that are available to you. Please also remember that you can reach out to us at any time on Instagram at DPC Podcast, on Facebook at The Dead Parent Club, and you can email us at dpcpodcast@hotmail.com. Alternatively, you can check out our website where a resources page is also available at www.dpcpodcast.co.uk. Also, please don't hesitate to contact me if you want to get involved in the podcast in any way, whether that be coming onto the show or to write a blog for us as well if coming onto a podcast isn't your thing. Thank you so much once again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.